Good evening. I'd like to call the November 1st meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Is it early November? Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members. Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Mantisi?
Here.
Mrs. Nadine Claiborne will be a few minutes late this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Yo.
Yo? What?
I've been wanting to say that for years.
Wow. Would you rather have...
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein will be here later this evening. Mr. Burbank?
I'm here as well.
Ms. Chalk?
Well, boy, I'm going to join Frank here. Hineni, that's Hebrew for I'm here.
Oh, wait a minute.
Ms. Robertson?
That's what Abraham.
I'm just here.
Can we do this in different languages,
no.
Kathy?
Proclamation of petitions, communications, and notices. Communications are on the desks. All right, I'd like to ask for an executive session at the end of this meeting for personnel issues and labor negotiations. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to address the legislature? Bill, you can address this as a municipal official.
Oh, is that coming up?
Yeah, but I don't think there's anybody from the public,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So come on up. Hi, Bill. Bill Goodman from the Town of Ithaca Town Board.
Yes, hi, everyone. I haven't been here in a while, but I had signed up early in the year to give a report tonight, and tomorrow night I'm going over to the Common Council to give a report there, so I thought I'd just touch on a couple of things that are happening at the town of Ithaca, and then if you have any questions, you can ask me. First, just to let you know, in case you hadn't heard, we did adopt our 2012 budget back on October 17th, and we had previously adopted a local law to allow us to exceed the tax cap, and we did exceed that. We had a 5.8% increase in our tax levy. A majority of that increase was to pay for infrastructure work and also to rebuild the fund balance in our fire protection fund, which we had been using up over the last few years. And then on the hydrofracking front, well, of course, we're watching very closely what's happening with the lawsuit out in Dryden, since we had passed a similar ordinance back in July. And we are also now looking at passing a road preservation law. And so we're looking at the county's law that you all adopted, as well as some other laws that local municipalities are working with for road preservation. And then with our comp plan, we're hoping will come up with some recommendations around the end of the year, beginning of next year, that they can then pass on to the town board. And some of the recommendations that we're expecting will be in that is to try and focus development in some of what we're calling the development focus areas, and I'm sure you're aware of some of those from the county's planning department, but basically up on East Hill near the East Hill Plaza, then down on South Hill at the intersection of 96B and King Road, West Hill up around the hospital, and then also an additional one down on Route 13 south of the city limits near where Ithaca Beer is now, where 13A and 13 join. And in case you weren't aware, Ithaca Beer is doing an expansion. They've bought a big parcel of land behind where they're currently renting and going to build a bigger brewery to allow for expanded capacity of brewing, and also have a beer garden there, a little pub area. So we're excited about that, and so we've been thinking, or our comp plan committee has started to think about that area, that stretch along 13, as possibly an area to develop businesses related to agriculture. The Ithaca Beer Company is hoping to start growing some of their own hops on, because they've now got an 80-acre parcel, which will be mostly farmland still, and growing some of their ingredients that they'll use in their beer pub. And with Early Bird Farm down there, we're trying to think of that as sort of an area for agricultural tourism and agricultural small-scale processing, and creating and hopefully getting rid of some of those older decrepit buildings that have been sitting empty there for a while, and making that a much nicer gateway and entrance into the town and the city coming up from the south. And so those are just a couple of things that we've been working on. I'd be happy to answer any questions that folks might have.
Thank you very much, Bill. I have a question about the tax cap. What would your cap have been? What percentage?
Our cap would have been the 2%.
There was nothing higher than that for growth or pensions?
Okay. With the addition, I think it would have been around 3.2% with the addition of those items.
Okay.
But, yeah, as I said, we decided to go up to 5.8%.
Okay, thanks. Frank?
Bill, first I wanted to thank you, and I hope you'll take the message back to your colleagues on the town board for your continued support of TCAT and contribution you've been making the last couple of years. That's very helpful, believe
me. Sure.
A question. Is Herb Engman still the co-chair of the Council of Governments?
Yes, TCOG, yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thanks very much, Bill.
Thank
Great
you
to
all.
See you. Thanks for coming.
Good luck with your budgeting.
Thank you. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Carol? Frank?
Frank can go first while I get out my paper.
Mine are relatively simple. This weekend coming up, there's a couple of events taking place. One is the Veterans Day Parade on Sunday the 6th. We're forming up at 1:30 down by Pritchard's on Cayuga Street, and the parade will start at 2 o'clock. If you have an opportunity to stop by and support the marchers, I know a lot of us would be very appreciative of that. The other event that's taking place this weekend, some of you are probably not as close to it as some of the rest of us are, but this is the a major running of the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, and it's a big event for anyone associated with the horse industry. And New York is coming into its own once again. They have a number of horses that are contenders in it. So stay tuned. That could be a very interesting and delightful time.
Thank you. Cal?
Yeah, I have two quick items. Some of the work of the assessment committee has been further developed by the New York State Bar Association. I was hoping to have a color copy, but because it's really much more impressive in color, but it's the cover issue of this month, the November-December New York State Bar Association Journal magazine. It's entitled Homeowners and Gas Drilling Leases, Boon or Bust, written by a lawyer from Westchester, picking up and really carrying many, many steps further the work that the real estate industry, appraisers, assessment, public assessors, concerned citizens did on the TCOG Assessment and Land Valuation Committee, and talking about some of the legal underpinnings and the transfer of risk to homeowners and to banks represented by leases associated with drilling. So people might want to catch that. It's not a quick read, but I do urge you to see it. And then I just wanted to extend an invitation that I was asked to extend. Greg May, who is a member of that committee, is also a very active and caring member of the Board of Better Housing of Tompkins County. And they will be having
a breakfast in particular for their in particular for their members, but also they're hoping to get community leaders and officials to that breakfast. It is November 11th at the Country Club, and you are all invited, but you need to get in touch with Greg. I have the contact information. I can't attend, but if anybody here would like to attend and show the support for better housing from the legislature, I can get you the contact information. Thanks.
Thank you, Al. Frank?
November 11th at 8 a.m.
That's a Friday.
They may be doing more than one of them.
Jim?
If you would send that to the clerk and she could email it all to us, that would be great.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you. Art and Darby, I'd like to welcome you both. Darby Kiley, for about a year and a half, was the Tompkins County staff of the Tompkins County Gas Drilling Task Force, and now she's the environmental planner for the town of Ulysses.
So and I think we'll kind of do it from down this end, Mark.
Okay. All right, great. And Art Pierce, the community volunteer par excellence, who's been working. And Art and Darby have made these presentations around the county, focusing on each town. And I asked them to do a whirlwind tour of Tompkins County as a whole, and they've agreed to fit 30 or more minutes of presentation into 10 or 15. So
we sometimes pull this out to about 2 hours, so compressing it down to 15, you might get a little tired out watching everything flip by. But the quick and easy way to get to the presentation, we have the tinyurl.com/gasmapping will take you straight to the presentation. This is kind of an edited version of all that, but it's broken down into a number of different PDF link. So again, I'm Darby Kiley. I actually still do work for the planning department one day a week and then work for the town of Ulysses. And so I've been fortunate to have this position for the last year and working with the Council of Government. So what we do during this presentation is we try to answer a number of questions. What does shale gas extraction look like? And we found that it's really useful for the residents, I mean, who really haven't gone out and information gathering to look at a lot of these images, and those are the ones I'm going to really flip through pretty quickly. We also look at a lot of the data that's been collected in Bradford County, just south of us in Pennsylvania. How many wells could be developed in Tompkins County? And so Art will present a lot of numbers associated with truck trips and chemical usage and water and so on, and then how land can be impacted. And just today posted to the Tompkins County Planning website and the Council of Government's Gas Drilling Task Force site is the municipal tools kind of package that I've been putting together along with Ed and the others in the planning department is available online now. And so as you're probably familiar, there's a number of work groups that have been working with the Council of Government's Gas Drilling Task Force. And so what we're presenting is what came out of what the mapping work group did, and it was myself and Art Pierce. We had a student, Zach Patton, who worked with us, and another number of other volunteers. So this is just, I'm going to run through the, here's what well or gas drilling looks like in Pennsylvania particularly. You'll have a number of well sites. These are actually wells that are in production. For every, I think it's 40 to 100 miles of pipeline, there'll be a compressor station. There are also gas processing plants depending on the nature of the gas that's being extracted, whether it's a wet gas or dry gas and what kind of components are in it. So there has to be processing associated with it. Access roads are put in for every 150 feet I forget all my numbers, just popped all out of my head. But just for example, about almost an acre of land is disturbed for something that's about 1,500 feet long for an access road. Well, the drilling rigs, there'll be a number of different drilling rigs that come onto the site, starting with the kind of smaller ones that we see for just water wells being drilled, and to the much larger, a couple hundred feet tall, that are used for the horizontal drilling. at the well pad. This is during the hydraulic fracturing stage, so there'll be a number of container trucks that hold not only the water, but the chemicals, the sand, and then all of this, all these components are put together and pumped under high pressure into the wells in order to do the fracturing. So there'll be about a 5-acre pad, more or less, with a number of just containers and trucks on site. And then again, here's some water containers from probably for the flowback fluids. And then this is directly from the New York State DEC's draft supplemental generic environmental impact statement, and it shows you what all the components are, and there's even a water impoundment in the background. Again, another water impoundment. They're being located in centralized locations so that they're providing fresh water. They'll be trucked from the water withdrawal site to a central location that can then feed a number of well sites, and then that's usually piped with kind of overland water pipelines. Another compressor station site, and then a couple other wells in relatively close proximity to one another and to a farming operation. This is just Zach, the student who worked with us, just did a Google Earth search in Washington County, Pennsylvania, which is in the southwest corner. And, you know, just in kind of searching around, he found this site that has 1, 2, 3, 4 well pads being developed in close proximity to, I mean, probably hundreds of residential units. And zooming in on that boxed area is here you can see the well site being developed and right beside all these houses. And the idea, we get into the technical side of things, but with this type of drilling, they do multiple wells on each pad. So this image shows that once the drilling is finished, you have just a small land disturbance, but the wells go vertically and then horizontally, and then these little zigzaggy white lines are the fractures that are made in the shale, and then that's, so you have 2, 4, 6 wells all from one well pad site. The quick and dirty of this is this shows the thickness of the Marcellus Shale, so why Bradford County is being highly developed. That's this county right here. The shale in that area is about 320 feet thick, so there's a lot of shale that's below there, whereas in Tompkins County we have the 160 line runs through the middle of Tompkins County, so it's not as thick, so that will more than likely hold less gas. And then the same kind of holds true for the Utica Shale, which is below the Marcellus Shale. This doesn't go into Pennsylvania at all, but up in this hashed area, mostly in a lot of Tompkins County, it's only 0 to 50 feet thick. So that's where this area might not be much of a target for the Utica Shale, but as we hear about some other counties to the east of us, and especially I think in the Norwich area, the shale is much thicker. I think this goes up to 200 and 300 feet thick. And we go through a number of numbers having to do with Bradford County and Pennsylvania in general, but the highly drilled counties at this point in Pennsylvania are Tioga, Bradford, and Washington County in the southwest corner. And in some of the research that we've been looking at, over 1,700 well permits have been issued in Bradford County to date. But as of the January through June 2011 production numbers, only 240 wells are actually producing gas at this point. Bradford County is there. I think it's through their planning page. They have a number of maps that they've put together, and this each colored dot shows a different quarter since July 2008 up through April 2011. I'm sure there's new data on there, so you can see that there's a lot of scattered. It's scattered, but then there are also clumps of, you know, in July 2008 there's a lot of drilling in Albany Township in Bradford County, and different. You can see how it's focusing in different areas at different times of per quarter. This puts together several maps that they have showing the overall activity from the wells themselves, which are pretty hard to see, little yellow dots. Water impoundments are included on here, water treatment facilities, water withdrawal, compressor stations, substations, and then all the different pipelines from there's a main Tennessee gas line that runs through the middle of Bradford County. The Susquehanna River here is running somewhat north-south. And then all of the smaller gathering lines, and then also there are water pipelines that go from water impoundments to well sites. And the way the mapping group started and just trying to get our heads wrapped around what could happen in Tompkins County is we looked at if there are multiple wells on a pad, the going theory right now is that there would be a 1 square mile spacing unit, so that's 640 acres. And if you look at all Tompkins County, which is 491 square miles, and take out the water bodies and some of the urbanized areas, you end up with about 420 square miles. And so we just have this uniform grid that we placed on the Tompkins County map, which shows about 420 well pads that could be located here. And that's not taking into account the leases, the roads, the other setbacks that would be included in this. So that's kind of was our starting point of, well, what's the maximum number? And then if they were just single well pads, you would multiply that times 16 because they would be on a much smaller spacing unit, just that 40-acre spacing unit. And so that's kind of where we got started. And so for each of the towns, we go through, you know, this is what it would look like on a uniform distribution. Groton was the last town that we visited. So here's theirs as 48 square miles. So they could expect a 48 well pads with anywhere from 8 to 12 wells per pad. And Zach also provided this visual for the group where it just shows some of these well pads, what they would look like on the landscape. So this is the village of Groton, and then just with well pads scattered around. So at this point, I probably took more than my first 5 minutes I was going to, and I turned it over to Art for his more than 5 minutes.
So the way we've been doing this is Darby does that introduction, which gives people a feel for what gas drilling looks like and what's been happening in Pennsylvania and what theoretically might happen in Tompkins County. And then what I've tried to do in this next section is zero in on each community and look at what it might look like. And what we talk about quite a while, and that's why this presentation does take an hour and a half to 2 hours when we do it with questions, is some of these issues about the uncertainties surrounding hydrofracking. Where are the sweet spots? What's the geology? The thickness of the shale, the depth down from the surface, the economics. Sweet spots aren't absolute. It's a matter of how good is the geology for gas drilling, but also at what price. So how valuable is the gas? Gas is at near record low prices right now. It's under $4 a thousand cubic feet. A few years ago, it was $12 a thousand cubic feet. At $12, you drill a lot more places than you would at $4. What does it cost to get it out and transport it? As pipelines are put in and infrastructure's in place, the marginal cost of drilling a well is less, and areas that were left fallow in the beginning may be drilled later. Leasing patterns. They can't drill where it isn't leased. They have to get the surface right somewhere to get on the land. And so how much land is leased? How big is the unit size? The 640 acres that Darby mentioned, the 1 square mile is the assumption most people are using. And then state forest land, it looks like you can drill under it, you just can't drill on top of it. And that opens up a lot of land area in Tompkins County that when we first did these presentations back in July, I assumed the state forest land wouldn't be drilled on. But in fact, I think it will be drilled under if they can get surface rights adjacent to it. And then, of course, government regulations and the zoning laws and amendments that various communities have passed will all affect what actually happens. Let's see if I can make this work. So we start with information from tcgasmap.org. I think most of you have probably seen this before. It's on the Internet, and if you haven't looked at it, it's worth looking at because you can zero in on each community and see the actual leasing pattern by parcel number. You can see that it varies widely in the county. from Ithaca with 12% as a town, all the way up to Groton with 69% leased. Overall, 39% of the land in the county is leased, or was when this analysis was performed, by 6% of the adult population. So the 6% of the population that controls 39% of that leased property. And this is what the map looks like on the website, and then you can zero in on each community and each parcel. And what we did is try to come up with some estimates of what might happen in Tompkins County and then what might happen in each community. There's about 492 square miles in Tompkins County, and if you deduct the urbanized and water acreage from that, you end up with net square miles of about 421 square miles. We just saw that almost 40% of the land is leased, 39%. And it seemed like a reasonable starting point for this analysis to assume that if that 50% of the land, 210 square miles, would end up either being leased or integrated through compulsory integration. And I'm sure you're all aware of that, but in many of the communities, we've taken quite a bit of time to talk about what that means and how it works. But essentially, the gas company doesn't need to control 640 acres. They need to control about 389 acres. And then they can force the surrounding 250 acres to be part of the unit. They can't go on the surface in that those adjacent properties, but they can go under them. With 210 square miles to be developed, you end up with, essentially on a square mile basis, 210 pads. And the assumption here is that you could fit 10 wells per pad. Probably it's going to be somewhere between 6 and 12, maybe 8 and 12. But we use in this analysis 10 wells per pad, one pad per square mile. So you end up with a total estimate of 2,100 wells in Tompkins County over the next 8 to 15 years. So then what we do is talk about what this might mean. Now, there's a lot of controversy and debate about environmental impacts and how severe they might be. But you can measure some things. You can measure the amount of water used and the number of chemicals used. And so we go in, and we're going to go through very quickly these numbers tonight, but we take quite a bit of time talking about it. And a lot of this was based on a study done for Middlefield, New York, by a company called Green Plan. And Green Plan did an analysis that looked at this for that one community. And the Council of Governments has now hired Green Plan to do a similar analysis for Tompkins County. So that's underway right now. And it'll have these numbers and more, and they'll be updated for the latest information that's available. So we talk about how much land area would be disturbed, how much farmland would be lost, based on what's being seen in Pennsylvania in terms of the size of disturbance per pad. About 8.8 acres per pad. We talk about the amount of water used, and that's certainly a number that is causes a lot of gas in the audience usually. But at 5 million gallons per well, you end up over the period of time of drilling Tompkins County, you'd have about 10 billion gallons plus of water used in that process. And that, in fact, is kind of a conservative number because many wells will be fracked more than once. It's a lot of water. What we have been emphasizing is actually this amount of water, as huge as it is, isn't really the problem in itself. The problem is transporting this water and also what happens to it when it's used, because chemicals are added to this water, and then it's not just water, it's hazardous waste. So the chemicals used per well, 167 tons per well is an average. So that would mean over the build-out, 350,000 tons of chemicals. And there'd be the flowback water. The water that's pumped down, about 20% of it comes back pretty quickly. It's called flowback. A lot more will come back over the next 5, 10, 15 years, and that's called produced water. But this initial flowback, you'd have about 2 billion gallons, and that water's got to go somewhere. And one of the problems New York State faces right now is, where does it go? Pennsylvania's been shipping it to Ohio, and for a little while they shipped some to New York. It's not at all clear where this water's going to go from these wells in New York State. And then we talk about truck trips. A number that's been widely used is that there's about 1,200 heavy truck trips per well. That's a one-way trip. So if you live in the area, a truck's going to come in loaded and go out empty. It's going to pass you twice. And by the time you double these trips for each of the wells we see drilled, you end up with something like about 500,000 heavy truck trips per year coming through the county, which is about double the current 600,000 heavy truck trips we get in the county. So it would be a major increase in heavy traffic, and these are big trucks. Some of them as heavy as 100,000 pounds, but a lot of them are big trucks, and a lot of wear and tear on local roads, and so that's a major issue that the communities are trying to address. The newest ESG-ICE not only includes references to heavy truck trips, but it adds lighter truck trips. And it now looks like they're saying about 4,000 truck trips per well, heavy and light. So that's a lot of traffic. And if you put a couple hundred wells in a community or a couple of thousand in a county, we'll notice it. And then jobs, we talk about the actual development and production jobs that come with drilling, and about 12 per well. And a lot of these workers come from different parts of the country where people have experience in this kind of activity, but some of them will be local jobs as well. And the 10-year build-out would suggest about 2,500 jobs each year, people employed in this industry, which would be about 4% of the county's current employment. And this is what it looks like on a town-by-town basis. So what I did is took the maps for each community and just went in and looked for space that was sufficient, either in terms of what was already leased or what could be integrated to accommodate a 640-acre spacing unit with room for a pad. And it ranges from very few pads in Ithaca, only three, up to 44 in Dryden, 44 in Groton, 440 wells in those two communities. And then what we've done in each town is then go in and look at that town and show them what it might look like. Ithaca is, there aren't many. There's Newfield, and you can see these yellow, if you can see them from where you are, would be plausible sites for pads. Danby, those are pads that would fit in. Ulysses, Enfield, Caroline. Notice most of these pads, most of the units are going to run, it appears anyway, on a kind of a slightly west of north axis, sort of running like this, following some of the geology in the area. And they'll tend to be rectangular-shaped units because that's the way they can get the most gas out. So we go through each of these communities, showing what it might look like.
Art, can you just describe the two different shades of brown?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So here, the brown is surface rights have been leased. The lighter brown is where there's uncertainty about the surface rights, but it's been leased, but they're not sure of the surface rights. And the gray is no surface rights granted. And the white is no leases. So Groton is certainly the exception in that most of the land has been leased in one form or another. And then Darby takes over and talks about municipal tools.
And this, I've boiled this down from about 10 slides to two now, mostly because what we've put together is what's been sent out to all the town supervisors and town boards recently is this list of municipal tools, which includes the what it is, why it would be a useful tool for a town to consider or a village. We actually have those included as well, and how to go about moving forward with those. So we're everything ranging from reviewing your comprehensive plan. So the town of Danby updated their comp plan in an effort to strengthen their zoning amendment that they passed. But, you know, thinking about that, the towns might not have that much say on the well pads themselves, so there are a lot of ancillary uses that will come along with then also housing. So putting something like mobile home park regulations, considering those, where are appropriate locations, how those could be developed, are just, you know, this is the list. Everything from the critical environmental areas, which I feel like we all go back and forth and how critical they, how important those designations will be based on how the DEC will view them. Wellhead and aquifer protections for a lot of the groundwater sources and municipal water supplies, noise, lighting, and air standards, and then just some of the aesthetic and sensitive area environmental areas, fuchsia protection, tree preservation, floodplains and wetlands, the pipeline regulations. The Public Service Commission regulates the pipelines that are over a certain length and of a certain pressure, but then the smaller pipelines are not regulated at all, and so towns could get into that as well. And then I've subdivision, extractive mining. So different from gas drilling, towns do have a say on where, in terms of zoning, where gravel mining and sand mining can be located within their jurisdiction. So there's probably going to be expansions of lesser used gravel mines in the area, so those could be areas to consider for towns. And then also even just the fees that towns charge. I mean, it takes a lot of time to review various documents, so the town could be recouping some of those costs. And then we usually just go through, here are some resources from the DEC's Marcellus Shale page, the Cooperative Extension page for Cornell. Also, I always like to highlight the webinars through the Penn State site, because every couple weeks or month they do a new one. And then just the resources that we've used. The Tioga County, New York has done their own resource binder that they've shared with their municipalities. And so that's been a great resource for us to use as well. Bradford County, sorry. And then a lot of these images, if you just want to go look at some of just the visuals of this, the Marcellus-shale.us is a good one to visit. And then again, this is our tiny URL that takes you right to the mapping page of the Council of Governments Gas Drilling Task Force. And we'll take a question.
Thank you very much, both of you. This is a tremendous resource for all of us, and I understand that your presentations have really been well attended out in the towns, and I think you've really done a lot to educate our residents. So thank you so much. Questions? Carol?
I have two. One, back, you don't have to go back to it, but you mentioned the dates. First of all, I just want to say thank you. I mean, this is a wealth of information, and it's presented with the maps. When you see the full presentation where you go through all those maps, it's even more powerful. And based on real numbers, maybe not real exact dots. I know you give a disclaimer that if you look closely at those maps, it's not necessarily where the gas companies will put the exact wells, and people should know that. I noticed that you mentioned the information that it was all based on was provided or researched between 2005 and October of 2009. That goes way back on the leasing page. Has that been updated since then? Have gas companies continued to lease up so that this is now quite a conservative estimate as to where there might be those leases?
I think the short answer is that probably, so this is work that volunteers did in collecting the leases from the county clerk's office, and so they, you know, were there up through October of 2009. I think the short answer is that there have not been many leases signed since then. But the problem is we don't know what has been expired or re-leased in terms of re-upped with the leases. So there's kind of some, it's A few towns have individually done some research. I know the town of Danby has at least. I don't know if you know of any others that have done some of the research on which have expired and which have not, and that's kind of a question out there for anyone that who might have a lease. If they have been let go of the lease, then they can file something with the clerk's office so that that can continue to be researched.
Okay, and the second question I had is where you talk about the municipal tools and have that whole long list of municipal tools. Do we have a sense of to what extent do our towns have any of those tools, or how many of those, that long list of tools they actually have in place?
Yeah, I mean, there are a handful of towns who have a lot of those, and I think that town of Ithaca, I know their regulations relatively well, and I think for them it just would be a matter of going back and rechecking and making sure the right justifications are in place or thinking through. But, you know, some of the, I think the biggest targets for drilling in the future will be a couple of the towns that don't have zoning anyway. And then they not only don't have zoning, they also don't have a lot of other regulations. And I often pick on the town of Newfield as not, they haven't passed a comp plan yet, which they're in the process of doing. But even if they had some site plan review regulations, that would be very useful just for some of the ancillary impacts. I mean, I think we see the Route 13 corridor as potentially being really developed, not necessarily for gas itself, but being lay down yards or stockpiling areas or just other housing development going in there that there's no regulations to slow that down or review it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Pat?
I was just going to mention that I have a friend who yesterday was traveling through northern Pennsylvania on one of the interstate highways down there, and something on the road flew up and hit the bottom of their vehicle and did quite a lot of damage. They were lucky there was no accident. Nobody was hurt, but it took about the rest of the day to get the vehicle fixed so they could continue their trip. And the tow truck operator told them that it was likely something that had fallen off one of the drilling trucks as they were going by, and that the tow truck operators are making out like bandits, as well as the repair shops down there, because of the number of things that are falling off these trucks.
Thanks, Pat. I have a question. You about the municipal tools. There are a lot of things towns can do even if they don't have zoning, right? So a lot of those regulations. You mentioned that the towns of Dryden and Groton, you were both assuming that both would have about 44 pads, but you had said that Groton was about 69% leased and Dryden about 39 or something like that, 41?
Right. Yeah, so Dryden's land area is about 90 square miles, and unfortunately, I know all these numbers now. Groton's is about 48 square miles. So, I mean, it's just the size difference, and that's kind of how the lease patterns would go.
Of course, now that I look at the map, of course.
Okay. Yeah, all Dryden's right. Humongous compared to Groton and some of the other towns.
Okay. All right. So then you're talking about similar coverage. It's just that the number of pads in Dryden is going to be about. Okay. Anybody else? Well, again, thank you very much. This is a tremendous resource, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. So very quickly on my report, just want to remind people that a week from today is election day, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., just in case anybody forgot about that. And we have the program from the Lift Every Voice concert, Voice for Success, the October 15th, this past a couple weeks ago. And we have placed an ad, administration placed an ad. I've got to post it on that. There's a little thank you card, so I'll put those on the top of the mailbox so you can have a look through that. Jim?
In the past, there was a contribution made to pay for the ad. Is that still the same policy this year?
I think we were able to just cover it. It wasn't a large amount. We took it out of the legislature budget and I think administration out of it. What did we do? Is that what we did? What did we do, Jim?
Did you pay for the whole?
I think we reached into our pockets.
Okay. Pam.
I just remembered that this Thursday at 6:30 at the Tompkins County Library will be a public hearing on the changes, proposed changes.
5:30?
Thank you, Frank. On the proposed changes in fares and some of the routes in rural areas. The fares in rural areas and the routes throughout the county.
Thursday at 5 at the library?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, evidently. Okay.
Thank you. County Administrator, your
question for you?
Sure.
Could you, under your report, give us a little heads up or status report on the economic, the governor's, the regional councils, and what the timetable is now?
Okay, I'll go through that. Excuse me. End of business today was the deadline for the applications, the consolidated funding application process by which Ed Marks and the Planning Department submitted a proposal for NYSERDA funding. TCAD submitted two proposals. Cooperative Extension submitted a proposal. A lot of agencies and private individuals, private businesses submitted proposals. Apparently yesterday was supposed to be the deadline, but the system crashed. I guess they had too many people uploading their proposals at once, so they extended that till the end of business today. Right now the councils are, well, I'll just speak about our council, Southern Tiers, reviewing those proposals. Elected officials were disinvited from reviewing proposals, so we are not allowed to review anything, and we won't be allowed to vote on the actual ranking of proposals. This was decided by another elected official who decided that at the local level we shouldn't have a vote. So that's going to happen. Then those will be ranked, and then the council's plan is in near final form. So it's a 5-year strategic plan that's being sort of the graphics and et cetera are being put together now. And I believe that within the next week or so, we'll council will see the final plan. You can actually go on the website and see all the plans, or at least sort of some kind of outline or draft document for each of the plans. If you go to nyworks.ny.gov, so that's the main site for the whole council process. So for the Southern Tier plan, it's also on there. It's actually only a PowerPoint that summarizes our document. It's not the full document, which is actually 200 pages long, before they added the graphics. So it's a big thing. So November 14th is the deadline for us to submit the plan to Albany, and the ranking of projects will be part of that. And then they are supposed to announce the winners of the larger grants in mid-December.
Margaret, can you say something? My recollection is that the funding is a two-tier. There are several big numbers, or there's a big number of which you can tap and you can apply in that category, but there's also a second tier, and it doesn't, just because you don't make it through the first larger number, that doesn't knock you out of the box. You still have a chance at funding for the region as opposed to the specific project. It's something like that.
Something like that. It's still pretty confusing and unclear. I think they're still working at it as they go along. There's $200 million that's in this that we're competing for in the initial first year of the 5-year process. So 4 regions out of 10 will get $40 million each, and then the $40 million that's left over will be split among the other 6 regions. So that's $6 or $7 million. So everybody will get something. But that's one bucket. But then funding through other agency funding will still be allocated according to scoring by the agencies. And our role in that is to say,
Yes, Ed, you know, Tompkins County's NYSERDA application gets the full 20 points. Mm-hmm. That's the maximum we can give. And so we put our 20 points on that, and then NYSERDA evaluates. And if they think, you know, it's a terrible proposal, at least we get 20 points on it. So it won't be a terrible proposal, Ed, sorry. But so our scoring is part of that, but the agencies will still be deciding on their allocations. I sound tentative because I am, because it's still, I think they're inventing this as they go along.
Can I put you on the spot for one more thing?
Sure.
Have you had an opportunity, as a member of one of, or a participant of one of the segments, have you had a chance to look at the proposals from all the other regions to see how ours, because we're in the southern tier one, because there was some concern about, excuse me, the one from the Finger Lakes being kind of weak. Can you make an evaluation, which is your own opinion, I understand, of how ours might stack up against the others?
I haven't. Today I just first sort of glanced at the other sites and saw, okay, they've each got them sort of posted. I haven't even had a chance to open up those documents, but that would be very interesting to do for anybody who is curious. And our document, again, it's just a PowerPoint that describes it, 10 or 15, 14 slides or something. It's by far not the whole document. So you're not going to get a lot of information out of that one. I don't know if the other ones have the full plans posted or not. I haven't looked. Carol?
Yeah, did you ever get, the committee ever get any updated information or answers to the questions about a list of existing state funding programs that are folded into this, which ones might be going away altogether, and what the total amount of money is?
I think you've already gotten this answer, which was that it's the same amount of money. It's existing funding. And, you know, whatever the state budget included as far as cuts to different agencies, that it is what it is. And there's no new money. This is just repackaging of money that was already in the state budget. So, you know, it's a different way of allocating the money. But basically, there's no new money. If there are any cuts there, it's allocations that were cut as part of this past year's state budget. So,
well, let me ask another way to ask the question. I know you don't have the answer now, but another way to ask the question would be, can we get a list of?
Why don't you contact Kevin McLaughlin at the Southern Tier Council? He's a staff person. He's the best person to answer that. It's the phone number's on the website. You can get that from him.
I didn't get an answer when I asked the first time around, and I mean, again, it's not that me, Carol Chalk, legislator, needs the answer. I think the public needs the answer, and all the agencies that are one by one hearing that the program you counted on and that you assumed would still be there, funding's been cut to that particular program, and we're hearing this one by one. It's just what the connection is. I don't think it's just relevant to me. So I don't expect you to have the answer now.
Yes, Frank.
Martha, are we too close to the beginning of the process to know how they will be evaluated for funding, but how they will be evaluated for success of the project once it's selected? Perhaps that isn't fleshed
out
yet. Yeah,
among the criteria for how they're going to choose includes, have you indicated benchmarks? Have you indicated how you'll measure success? And there's in our document, there are pages of, you know, for this proposal, we're going to measure how many jobs, how much energy saved, how many new businesses, how many new people served, different things relevant to. So, I know that's what we did. We really said, okay, what makes sense? And we said, here are going to be the measures for each project. So, we'll see.
And we can access the all the proposals on the state's website?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. nyworks.ny.gov. And if you go through all the proposals, tell me what you see. I'll be very interested. And finally, for my report, I want to appoint Diane Braddock to the Workforce Investment Board for a term through June 30th, 2014. All right. County Administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. I have several items in my report tonight. I think I can get through them fairly quickly. They're mostly updates. But at the conclusion, I know we talked about an interest in looking at the capital plan during our last budget review committee. So if you'd like to do that at the end of my report, I'm prepared to do that. I think all of you have the handout that you received by email on your desk, so that will be our guide. But before we get to that point, just let me update you on a few items, maybe beginning with, for continuity, road preservation. Darby talked about one of the things that can be controlled locally in a gas drilling environment is the control of local roads. You recall that we passed a local law. We also talked about an RFP that we would circulate to engineering firms that will help us enforce that law, to help us estimate potential damage to roads that would be caused by high-frequency, heavyweight trucking activity, to estimate the impact of damage on the road, and then when a project is over, to calculate the actual damage. We've talked about that for some time. Worked it through. F and I have had a lot of input in terms of how the RFP is written. From other potential partners in this, the goal is to have a number of municipalities who have the same approach to the way they measure potential and actual damage, that we have consistency across boundaries and therefore a more defensible way of doing this. The RFP is done and it is out, I'm pleased to say. If you'd like to look at it, you can hop onto the purchasing division's webpage. You can read it. It's a more readable document than when it began. We have alerted something like 100 engineering firms in New York State to let them know to take a look at the page if they're interested. Hopefully we'll get a strong response back, and we've invited all the other municipalities within the county to join us in taking a look at those to see if this might work for them as well. So that is underway. Responses are due back on November 18th. So we'll keep in touch with F&I on our progress there. Also staying with F&I, and I don't know if Carol was going to report on this or not, but we have been alerted to an opportunity to perhaps save energy and money. Opportunity brought to us by Ken Schlatter, who was made aware of a low-cost leasing plan for solar panels to put on rooftops. And through a combination of tax credits and grants, it appears that there is a firm that can install rooftop units at a very low cost, a monthly lease, and a plan that will generate savings that are roughly twice the cost of leasing the panels. So we are doing very quick due diligence on that. Ed Marks and Arell are working on that. We'll talk to F&I about it on Friday. It's something that we'll have to look at very quickly because the tax credits that underlie this plan expire at the end of this year. So we need to move quickly. And again, we'll talk to F&I about it on Friday, and hopefully we can make quick progress on that. Last time I reported, I told you that we TC3 and the county were co-hosting a Smart Work Conference. The idea is to really educate other municipalities and school districts in this county and Cortland County about smart work and how it can help them streamline and save money and improve productivity. That event was held on the 26th. I will confess attendance was fairly light, but we did have some municipalities. We did have a couple of school districts, all of which was from Tompkins County. We didn't get any Cortland participation in the meeting, but it is the beginning of a process to help explain to others that this is something that seems to work in a governmental setting, and encouraging them to take a look at it for their own purposes. The next step there is to have TC3.biz talk individually to municipalities and school districts, with us perhaps as a validator that it really does work. It's not culture change, and it's not the flavor of the year, but it's a very effective management tool that's helped us greatly in 8 different settings now. So that continues. On the personnel front, it feels a little awkward to begin talking about this, but we are beginning the first steps of a search process for a mental health commissioner that needs to begin to make some forward movement. That is starting with the development of a search committee. We have drafted a list. This is a fairly complicated process only because, much like public health director, the appointment needs to come upon the recommendation of the Community Mental Health Services Board and with confirmation by you, the board, and the state of New York. And there are any number of stakeholders in this community that have an interest in us making the right decision. So we are beginning to put together a search committee. It looks large right now. I have a list right now of 13 members. including legislators, board members, community members, departmental representatives, including a union representative, a community person, and a couple of funded agencies. So I will be communicating with Health and Human Services, WDIC, on this. I have talked to the Mental Health Board, and they are very much interested in working together with us on this. So that will begin fairly soon. Lastly, on the personnel front, we also have a pending vacancy in the Highway Division. The Highway Manager, Bill Sesney, has announced that he intends to retire in early December, and we'll be talking with you more about this in the coming days. I think that is the list of things that I wanted to talk about before Capitol. I will tell you that on November 9th, I will be going to the next quarterly meeting of the Indigent Legal Defense Board in New York. That's the same day as the public hearing on the budget, which begins at 7. I think I intend to be back in time for the public hearing, but I'm continuing to be involved in that board. So that's my ongoing report. If you'd like, I can just continue and...
First, we have a question, and I think Judge Lippman looks at your schedule and says, when can I make it most inconvenient for that Joe guy?
So it seems.
Pat?
Joe, I just wanted to pass on a comment about the Smart Work Conference. There were a couple people that I spoke with who had some interest in attending, but found it very hard to take that long of a block of time, and said that it was too bad that it couldn't have been split into two sessions or something like that. So I just thought I'd pass that along to you.
That's a good point. We heard the same thing. I do think there's interest. When people hear about this, mm-hmm. kind of the mystique, the mystery of it goes away. It's a very hands-on approach, and they like it. It's just getting the message out. And maybe we take another run and try to make it a shorter block of time and attract more. I'll bring it to TCOG as well. We'll bring it back to TCOG with Carl Haynes and talk to the group some more. Maybe that's what we should do.
Okay. Why don't you launch into the capital program discussion?
Okay. Okay.
What?
Sorry. Did either of you ask for an executive session
mm-hmm.
tonight?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
I circulated this that I hope all of you received last Thursday or Friday by email. So I know you wanted to take a look at it in advance. It's a series of documents that relates to the capital plan and the capital budgets. And I know at Budget Committee last time, there was a general interest in taking a closer look at this. I will tell you that I think there are some lessons that we're learning along the way. I think last year we didn't spend much time at all on the capital plan. This year we tried to bring it into a presentation format very similar to a department. I think next year we need to really call out the capital plan a little bit more, maybe have a separate document, devote a separate time to it during the budget process so we can really get through it. So we learn each year as we go through this process. I'll begin at the very start that's labeled capital plan and estimated budget. This is really where the process began back in July with the presentation of kind of a consolidated plan to the Budget and Capital Committee at that time. And if you look at the first page there, and we gave you the first 10 years of the 20-year plan. Dooley had asked for the 20-year version of it, which we sent out subsequent to this. This packet just shows you the first 10 years. If we go out another 10, it will simply show that as time goes on, debt is paid off, and we have less of our money that's been committed to debt service on projects. But let me really quickly just kind of explain format here. The first part of this is really the commitments already made. So when you see debt service ongoing, it means you've already authorized these projects. And we've bonded for them, or at least we've issued short-term debt for them that we will need to turn into long-term debt over time. So as you look through this report, and this is a little bit different than what you see in the budget itself, because this report is specific in terms of what debt issues we're paying for and how much we will pay for them in the coming years. So it breaks it down debt issue by debt issue. And that's the top half of that page. The bottom half of the page are things that we think we will do based on prior plans. And you can see down at the bottom half of that page what we think we will be doing over the next several years, when we think we will be doing them, and when those projects begin to show up as debt service expenses. So you can see, for example, I'll pick out Ellis Hollow Road Phase 2. It's a $3.8 million effort, but the debt wouldn't begin to hit until 2013, which means that the plan would be to get going either late 2012 or 2013. As you look down, farther down the bottom half of the page, you can see the things that we have estimated will get going in either probably early 2012, and that will be bills that we need to pay in the near term. And that begins with the Seneca Road Bridge replacement, and you can see what those projects are. And then down below at the very bottom, those are one-time expenses, basically cash expenses at the bottom. So now I'm going to go back just as an overview on that page. If you look at debt service total, about mid-page, you can see where our debt schedule is expected to be if we don't do anything else. So if we weren't to incur any more debt, this is how we would run out the debt service schedules on those major projects. And you can see, as we've talked about for some time, there are some drop-off points, particularly as we hit around 2017, when we've paid off a large public safety communications issue. It's about $1 million a year. That drops off. And you can see, again, how debt flows after that. So that was the big threshold period in the existing debt service. Carol, I see you.
For the anticipated bond section, what criteria did you use to put items on this list? For example, on the road and bridge projects, were those taken from the list that that we've been, you know, F&I's been using for years, such as projects in the pipeline?
Yes.
And
modified
projects
by the PAR form. So some may move up, some may move back. All of those come out of the PAR forms, and basically they reflect, you know, are they ready to go? So the ones you see near term are the ones that we believe are ready to go. So that's, again, that's...
So we this is a staff assessment. This hasn't been vetted yet by the decision by the legislature.
Well, I think in the case of the roads, I think we've talked about those roads being next on the list. But again, nothing has been... I think this is accurate. I don't think any of these debt issues have been authorized by the legislature. This is what we think will be happening next. Having them in the budget doesn't mean that they're going to happen, doesn't mean that you've authorized them happening. It's just what we believe will be next on the list based on the work plans that have been presented, and then you would have to authorize the issuance of debt to support the projects.
Thanks. Julie?
I'm looking at the 20-year version. Did everybody get a copy of that?
Everybody got it by email yesterday.
Okay. I wasn't the only one who asked for this. I think Frank and Mike had asked for it.
Right.
And in looking at that one, that's where I have questions for the discretionary ones, because although on the first 10 years that were handed out, the cost gradually decreases, when you get to 2021, 2022, 2023, they suddenly go up again. And I didn't understand why.
I don't know whether additional projects are on. Can I see your form?
Yeah,
is it the addition of the jail?
Probably. Well, but it's the debt amount for specific road projects that I'm talking about.
These are just, again, they're 20-year debt service schedules.
Yes, I understand.
That we've used. And you're talking about slight increases in debt for these?
It seemed funny that they all bumped up roughly the same time.
Well, we use a debt service calculator. And it is just running the debt service schedules on these projects over generally a 20-year period to estimate what the debt's going to be.
Well,
so it's not anything that relates to any change of plans or anything like that. It's simply running it on a standard debt service calculator and coming up with the payments.
I have another question. I don't find that reassuring, but I believe you. another question had to do with, again, on the discretionary list, Center of Government Building Project and Community Justice Center addition. We just took some action about the Community Justice Center addition.
Yes.
This, so that's not reflected on this list.
No, it's not. And that's, as we go through here, we'll talk about where we started, which is the capital plan that was presented to budget back in July. What's in the budget document, which crosswalks right to this plan. But also, as was presented during the capital presentation, there have been adjustments in those amounts, and I want to go through those, as we did before, in terms of the Community Justice Center, Center of Government. I think those are the two that change. And I, again, as we go through here, we'll be able to explain what changes there are, and in fact, it really had no effect on bottom line, and we'll talk about that too.
But you're not going to talk about that now or this year.
I'm going to talk about that momentarily.
Oh, okay.
This
sorry.
Is just this
sorry.
Is this
Please,
is the
ahead.
First of three sections of this report.
Thank you.
This
Pam.
Is our starting point.
Okay, Pam. Yes, I have a question, and if you're going to cover this later, I'll wait until then, but. In the debt service, the bonded section, mm-hmm. at the end of 2014, we have, it ends, we have a almost $2 million, or $1,700,000, that's the last, we don't, that we end that at the end of 2014. So that, but my basic question is that why the contributions at the enterprise funds, why that, I'm assuming that's money we are getting. What,
right.
Why $1.9 million?
Right.
And why does that drop down dramatically in 2015?
I think that's the drop off of the solid waste, the initial bonding for the solid waste improvements years ago. If you go to... It may be the next page where it says contributions and parenthetically enterprise funds and others.
Okay.
That might help explain this. So if you look at 2014, you can see it's $1.9 million. And then in 2015, $786,000 of solid waste debt drops out. Therefore, their contributions go away. So they paid off a debt issue there. Same thing is true with the community college where you've got $475,000 in debt. It goes to zero in 2015, so the debt goes away, and therefore their contributions go away as well. They're paying for that debt service that shows up on the first page.
Okay, is that why it's credited to that account?
That's right, yeah. So we bring money in from the other funds. So this is really the full debt service chart. Only a part of this debt is covered by the general fund or property taxes.
Okay.
So why don't we let Joe finish and see how maybe that'll cover.
But if there's a point where it's confusing and you need to interrupt me, don't hesitate to do that. So we've gone through the initial plan and the enterprise contributions. Now we get to the budget, and that's the second section. It's called capital and debt. And these are simply pages pulled right from the budget document that you've been working from. It crosswalks between the capital plan, what you've seen, and this document. So the projects that you saw in the plan, you see again here. There were a couple of additions that were put in here after the plan was developed. We put in cash for the courthouse relocation because as time went on, we realized that was going to be a real expense that we had to deal with. So there's $250,000 put in there in cash for the courthouse relocation and renovation, and $75,000 for additional study of the center of government. Julie, those are a couple of the things that were changed as the budget itself was changed. Those are the two items that were originally to be funded with property taxes. And as the current budget sits awaiting your approval tonight, those instead would be funded by applying reserves using one-time money. So that's a change. So as you go down there, again, you can see the enterprise funds and you can see what was expected for debt. Now, the other point that Dooley made, and this goes to the last of the three sections, The section is called Presentation of the 2012 Capital and Debt Budget, and this was the PowerPoint that we did back on September 19th. This tries to summarize what we've already talked about. And what we really tried to do is to make a lot of information more meaningful to you to help understand what was going on. So I'll go through this very quickly, and I'll stop when I want to highlight where things changed after the budget was presented, prepared, and where it is now. And again, this was explained back in September when we made a presentation. So if you look at that first slide, the recommended budget, you can see the debt service is actually down from 2011 to 2012 by $250,000. But the cash capital, the amount of cash that we'd allocated, is up, largely because of those two items that I just talked about, the relocation of the legislature and the center of government study. So the total amount committed in this budget to capital and debt was up by about 1.3%, or $68,000. And then we broke that down into its two components, debt service and cash. So the next slide, which is the top of what's here labeled as page number 2, contribution to debt service, it shows you 2011 and 2012. How much was the total expenditure? How much came back to this fund from enterprise accounts like solid waste in the airport? And how much was left for the property tax to cover? And that amount was $4.5 million for property taxes to cover for debt service. The next slide down just kind of reiterates where are those revenues coming from? And it lists those: solid waste, the airport, TC3, Food Net, we carry debt for that facility. So those are the sources of revenue that are in the capital budget. Then we go to cash. How much is in the budget for cash? And again, you can see on this slide, there's $768,916 in this budget in cash for capital projects. If you can see that at the top of page 3. It's up by $320,000 again. That's when the budget reflected a target cash-supported payment for the relocation. The bottom slide on page 3 highlights the new debt-supported projects that are in here. And I think this is probably where a lot of you wanted to know in greater detail what was happening in this budget. And there are two columns here. When the budget was presented, those were the numbers that we put in the budget. So for Seneca Road Bridge, for example, it was around $800,000. We have an update column in here as well, and I will explain that as we get to the things that are updated. But there were changes that happened after the budget came to you. We need to reflect, because it's a living document, and we want to make sure by the time we're done, it's as close to our understanding as reality as we can be. So you can see the budget and the updates are very consistent all the way until we get to the relocation of the Community Justice Center. At the time the budget was prepared, the expectation was that was going to be a $2.4 million project. As I recall, that was based on bump out of the Human Services building. We also believe that the Center of Government project was going to be $1.3 million. That was the plan at that time. And that was basically a minor improvement to get us to that point. As times went forward and as Holt began to give us estimates of what these elements would be, the architects that we commissioned to help us answer these questions, the numbers changed. So the relocation of the Community Justice Center, as Holt has given it to us now, would be in a standalone building. That's our operative assumption right now, in a standalone building. The assumption is COFA stays where it is in the Human Services Annex. That means we need to find a home for the Community Justice Center. That means it would be in a standalone building. The estimate of cost there is $1.5 million if it were to go in a standalone building. So it was 2.4, it's now 1.5. Center of Government, that was originally $1.3 million, that was the estimate of that. Under the whole plan that would expand Building C, where the Board of Elections is, build a two-story addition for planning and ITCTC, it's a $2.3 million plan. So you can see that even though there's been a change in those numbers from the original budget to the update, when you get to the bottom line cost is about the same. So it really didn't have an effect on budget. So once you finish that and you look at the debt service on each of those approaches, it's about $400,000 for those new projects in the first year, going to $800,000 in the second year.
Sure. Pam? Yeah, could you explain what the deferred maintenance, the 2.4?
Yeah. Deferred maintenance is the plan that we talked about last year, which is a $2.4 million project over a three-year period, $800,000 a year for each of the next 3 years. The first installment on that, again, $800,000. We're assuming that it would be spread over 5 years, $800,000. And so the debt service on that first installment is included in those debt service numbers at the bottom of that page.
And what is it for?
It's for accumulated deferred maintenance on county buildings, roofs, mechanical systems, those kinds of improvements. Again, last year we basically took ongoing capital money out of the budget for that kind of maintenance and replaced it with an initiative, again, 3 years, $800,000 a year. Now, if I could say one more thing before other hands go up, all these have to be authorized by you. So again, I want to emphasize, putting it in the budget doesn't mean that it is a different way of authorizing a project. It doesn't mean that. It means that we have a reasonable expectation that these projects will go forward in the coming year, and we put money aside in the budget to cover that. But if you decide, as the individual projects come forward, you don't want to do it, or you want to do it differently, you may still do this. So this is a planning document to make sure we've got resources to do what we believe could be coming, but it doesn't usurp any authorization at all. It's simply a budget.
Carol and Peter?
Yeah, could you refresh my memory on the center of government figure that's in here? Does that build in any assumption about the sale of the old library building site, building and site, whatever?
I don't believe it does, no. No. The $1.5 million is the cost of a standalone community justice center. The bump out of Building C, it's just the bump out of Building C. So it doesn't assume sale proceeds from the library, which would come at the conclusion of that process, but it does not.
Yeah, at the conclusion. Okay. Thank you. So nothing in here anywhere built in an assumption about the sale of that building. This is not just Carol
Chalk asking.
No,
it's correct. And Carol, it's a good point, but it wouldn't happen until the end of those projects. Now, I guess my last point on this slide is Dooley raised the question about, didn't we take some things out recently as a part of the budget amendments that you proposed? It's the CJC debt and center of government debt that has been taken out of the 2012 budget in the belief that we won't be able to get started on those projects quickly enough for the debt to hit 2012. So that's an adjustment that you propose to make.
Peter and then Pam.
Yeah. By the way, before saying it, let me apologize for arriving late, and let me pre-apologize for leaving early, but I had surgery today, and so I am still recovering from it. I have a question about deferred maintenance. In other places where I've come across that word before in other contexts, and the way I've come across it is that deferred maintenance is, let me put it this way, one had a budget, an automatic budget that somebody figured out in advance as to how much money you were going to spend on maintenance every year so that you would never have to do a special project on maintenance. And then sometimes when budgets got tight, people willfully didn't fund that maintenance that they knew they were supposed to do, and then accumulated something in another account, which was deferred maintenance, namely the amount that they were supposed to spend on maintenance and didn't. And then at some point, people would see that number rising, and they'd say, hey, we have to fund that now to get the deferred maintenance down to zero again. Is that the way it comes from? Do we someplace have an account saying how much maintenance we should be doing on all of our capital assets so that we never run into the problem of having to carry out special maintenance programs like the one you were talking about?
AREL has a plan. AREL has last year laid out kind of the schedule of things that needs to be done on our buildings. And I know what's happened over the past couple of years is we hit the wall on our budget. We had to almost unfund or certainly bring funding to a very low level to do things that we would like to do on an ongoing basis. And we realized that we can't do that forever. We have to catch up at some point. So, again, last year, AREL laid out a plan that was a three-year, $800,000 a year plan that addressed very specific things in the belief that if we can get through that and then have a reasonable maintenance budget in the future, we won't have to, again, go out and bond for $2.4 million. I'd be happy to share that list with you, Peter. I don't have it with me tonight.
No, I don't really care about the list, but what I at some point, AREL had this, said, hey, we've gotten behind. We have to fix this. And that came from Arell's head because he's in this business. He is with these facilities all the time. But we, of course, are not. And it would be nice if the budgeting were to have some sort of a way to allow amateurs to see that, in fact, we're not doing the maintenance that we should do in an ongoing way without having to wait for AREL or someone else to say, hey, it's time to put extra money into this. That's just a comment.
Well, I think we amateurs know that we weren't funding his full request or we weren't increasing. There's a, I think, Ed, in the capital 20-year capital plan, isn't there, there's an sort of allowance, an amount for, it's considered maintenance, but big projects like roof repairs, and I don't know if you want to say anything about this, Ed, but we were falling behind on what we should have been doing on to keep up with that kind of thing. So it's not, you know, just fixing little things. It's the big ticket items.
I understand, but I just wonder if that had been documented in a way that someone like me, who doesn't know anything about it, could have looked and said, hey, Joe, we're falling behind on our maintenance without having any special knowledge that you have to have in order to make that statement. That's the only the comment I'm making. I'm not questioning any of it.
Yeah, I think the list is in the 20-year capital plan. I think that includes the big items that are basically maintenance.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, big repairs you do every 10 or 15 years. Pam and then Kathy?
Well, I think that in the past I remember seeing lists like that for large things that AREL has estimated that we need to be spending money on to continue our maintenance at what the level it should be. My question has to do with, I just wanted to check in the facilities budget, they have $800,000 in here listed for deferred maintenance for next year. And so my question is, is that what that money is?
Exactly.
Comes from this bond? Okay.
Yeah, that's the program description.
Okay.
So he's saying, as a part of my work program for next year, I will be doing $800,000 worth of deferred maintenance. The source of that $800,000 is debt.
Okay.
And that's what's covered in the capital budget that we just went through.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Ed, is the capital plan, capital program on the web, or is that something you can maybe should send to people? You could send it around. Okay. Thank you. Kathy?
Thanks. Just for Peter's benefit, I wanted to reference, in the facilities world, deferred maintenance is thought of in a spectrum, but basically it's within two limits. One is any and all maintenance that you should have done, like a homeowner would like to have their house painted because it's starting to flake, but that you didn't do and that will cost you more, and will cost you more either because materials cost more or because the lack of having done the maintenance means that it incurs more maintenance costs, like a leaky roof or something like that, and there's a span, but deferred maintenance in the government world can really pile up fast, and this is why we've talked about it in the past as something that was a high priority for us. Unfortunately, due to the economy, every taxpayer resident of Compton County knows all too well about deferred maintenance because everyone is struggling with trying to prioritize that, and so it's entirely appropriate and fitting that we're making these kind of prioritization decisions ourselves, because we just frankly can't afford to keep all the facilities in Tompkins County in the equivalent of runway road specs. We can't afford to do it. So we have to make some decisions on what to repair, what would in effect cost us the most if we deferred it the longest, and fix it now to save us money. And it's a hard thing. That's why having Arel and Ed assist us in these recommendations is really important.
Thank you, Kathy. Seth, Joe, you want to keep going?
I think that's almost it. The last page of the PowerPoint was a reiteration of what is new in the way of cash-funded projects, beginning with that aquifer study, and this is a continuation of capital expenditure we've done for several years. Courthouse relocation and center of government planning, that had been a targeted number. It's now, if the amendment that you're looking at tonight passes, that's now funded with one time. And a very small TCAT capital, that's actually much less than it is historically. So the $405,000 is new in cash. And then we wanted to make sure that you looked at, you know, what is the midterm projection of debt based on what we've talked about. And there it is. I mean, this comes out of the budget. So the existing debt does decline between now and 2015. That declining debt is then backfilled with debt on new projects that you've yet to authorize. So you can see where the debt service numbers go between 2012 and 2015. That's basically it.
Thank you very much, Joe. I think that was time well spent. I appreciate that.
And again, next year we will have a new comprehensive plan, and Marks is working on that, and it will be ready, I believe, in time for the 2013 budget. And I promise you we will have a different kind of document, and we will call out this element of the budget early in the process where you're talking about.
And Ed really was planning to revise that capital program earlier this year, but our decisions have taken long enough that it didn't make any sense to, and he reported this to the last capital plan review committee meeting, it didn't make sense to revise the plan while we were in the middle of deciding some of these major facility questions. Frank, and then Dooley.
Thanks, Martha. Joe, thank you very much for doing this. I know I was one of the people that asked for it. First, a comment about the last page where it says new cash capital project.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions. Let me ask you very simply, for the benefit of anybody who's listening who isn't sitting around this dais, when we say new cash projects, can you just quickly say where the cash is coming from?
And again, this means it's not supported by debt, so we have to find it from different sources. As this plan was presented to you, this would all be property tax supported. I want to make sure about the aquifer study. Was that one time? Was that property tax supported? So this would come out of property taxes. However, again, the budget that you will be looking at tonight that came out of the budget committee instead takes $325,000 of this that would have been funded with property taxes, courthouse relocation, and the COG planning, and instead pulls that out of reserves and pays for that with one-time money.
The a specific on that TCAT capital, at some point we're going to be bringing a capital project to the three of the funding entities. With regard to that facility, that with the demand on service, the expansion of that facility is something we were talking about among the three or four of us when we had those special funding meetings. At some point, and I don't know if this will be 2012, but some of it's going to depend on the feds and the transportation bond whenever they decide to pass that, we may be back and need an amendment to that. So I don't know how easy. I know we need 10 votes to amend the capital budget, but that number could grow sometime during 2012.
We could probably go to 4,000.
Oh, that's a cash contribution, right?
Right.
Okay. I have one other item that has nothing to do with the capital budget, and it has something to do with your report, a comment you made in your earlier report. Would you like me to do that now? You said that we were beginning to work with an outfit regarding solar panels. Being around long enough to watch the panels go up on the library, the solar panels, it's both a cursing and a blessing, a curse and a blessing. One of the problems we ran into with those panels was when they built the parking garage, kids were going up there throwing stones at the panels and breaking them. And the company that supplied them either went out of business or didn't have any panels left. And we were stealing panels from other parts of that roof to correct that so that we had some panels that were working. Could I make a suggestion that whoever we're talking to would make sure that we have access to a supply, and Arel can store them in the basement someplace, of extra panels so that if something were to happen, we have a backup supply of them, or get a carved-in stone promise that the company is not going to go out of business.
Yeah, these would be leased units. And again, we're a little premature. Ed and Arel and Ken and others are doing due diligence right now to make sure this all pans out. But if it does go forward, it would be a lease. And the company that we would lease from also would install and maintain these panels. And before any panel would be installed, there's an analysis of our consumption patterns to give us confidence that if we do put it up, we're going to save more than we spend. So things seem to be looking pretty good on this, but you're right about sometimes the devil's in the details. And we do need to move quickly, but we do intend to look at those details. And again, we've also alerted other members of TCOG. This may be an opportunity for others in the community to take a look at. So we've tried to broaden out the announcement of this.
And the savings will be enjoyed somewhere between Nathan's lifetime and mine, right?
Okay, Dooley, then Leslie, and Carol.
Joe, independent of the full revision of the capital plan by Mr. Marks next year after the legislature has made some decisions that need to be made, could you please update in its existing format that you don't like, the present 20-year capital plan, to reflect the changes that are in your handout but not in here?
Yes. No, absolutely.
That shouldn't take very long. But I wanted to talk about deferred maintenance. I had asked every legislator to be sent the page from Bill Sesney that summarized the capital road deferred maintenance. The deferred maintenance plan for roads, which was a capital plan. It began in 2005. It was supposed to end in 2010. I'm not sure if it's reflected on the 20-year handout or not. It's in... So is it listed as federal aid projects? No. I just wasn't sure where it was. But what I wanted to say about it was that it's an example of us trying to do what Peter was asking about, recognizing that things had gotten behind. We voted to do something, but in carrying it out, we didn't quite do what we had intended, so we've gotten further behind. That's all.
Can I just respond to your technical question? It is a part of the 2010 Health Department and other bond issue, that big $17.99 million one.
I wouldn't have guessed
David
that.
Just whispered to me.
So okay.
Kevin whispered to me.
Thank you.
Reverend? Joe, I have a couple of things. One of my first questions was, do they ask about making these things match? So you got that. The Community Justice Center addition, I'm not sure I heard clearly what that was.
Okay. The Community Justice Center addition was something different than we now believe it will be.
Right.
Originally, it was going to be a bump out of the Human Services building. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a much more expensive than what we're talking about now. So that was in the mid $2 million range, $2.4 million. Then came Holt. Mm-hmm. And in the work with Holt, and in also making some decisions about locations of certain things, Community Justice Center is now expected to be, in this scenario, a standalone building. And a standalone building, they estimate, would cost $1.5 million.
So it's not expected. You needed a budget number.
Right.
Some sort of a planning number. So the assumption was.
That's right.
This is an assumed number. Yeah. I have two more quick questions. Thank you. Facility restoration project. The next one right after Community Justice Center. What are we talking about? The who? Yeah. What did you say?
Yeah, why don't you ask your question? Is it you're asking for what that is?
Yes.
Yeah. That is that deferred maintenance program.
That is what that is.
Yeah. Fancier name.
And I know I haven't seen the capital list in a long time, but the last I remember seeing one, there was a public safety facility was on it. Are we done with that? It's not here anymore? There are no priorities?
No, it was... It is still a part of that long-term capital plan. There's still uncertainty about when it would happen, whether it's in 2014 or 2015, sometime in there. So the projects that you're seeing in the report that we gave you are basically those that we believe will be happening at a certain time. So if you look at the capital plan document that Ed is updating, it still includes that. We, as a county, still need to decide what the scope of that's going to be and when it will happen. We have it still on the radar screen.
So, no, I'm not. If you're talking about rebuild or no rebuild, that's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring more to the more expensive maintenance that we said we were going to do on the facility, including some of the HVAC stuff and so on. So that does not factor in to these next few years.
Some of it does. We probably should have brought Arell's schedule that he had last year on the 2.4. Those kinds of improvements will be a part of the $800,000 a year deferred maintenance. HVAC, roof, alarms, those kinds of things at the Justice Center will be a part of that.
At the jail.
At the jail.
At the jail.
Oh, that's fine. I just remember the number being much more than $800,000.
Well, remember, we've got 2.4 in over a period of 3 years. I can't recall how much of that is dedicated to the jail.
That's fine.
But it's a chunk of it.
That's fine.
And then there's the other question about the expansion, which is
so it's lumped day. In with the deferred maintenance piece.
Yes.
Thank you.
Carol?
Thanks, Martha.
Okay, Carol?
Yeah. I want to come back to the question of... highway projects, roads and bridges, and whether we, what considerations go into the assumption about how much we'll have to bond for upcoming projects. So we've heard with increasing urgency as we go over at facilities and infrastructure, as we go over the highway capital projects, we're, you know, in the works every quarter from staff that amounts that we sort of expected way into the future several years ago for federal and state shares of projects may not pan out at the levels that we thought they might, to the point where they're now recommending that we assume a 20% local share in general when we plan projects into the future, where we used to consider plan a 15% local share. So the Marsh Marcia Shelley funds, and the some of that's federal and some of that's state, and we certainly, you know, every time we hear a report, the amounts that we may or may not get on various projects as reimbursement, how far behind the state gets in actually sending us the check for reimbursement for prior projects so that we have it in the budget, and then what we might budget into the future, you know, it's always uncertain and seems to be becoming less certain, and then how what we even might be able to ask for, how big that pot might be that I was talking about under the report from the state and to the Economic Development Councils, how big that pot might be. I'm not sure that's certain. So in this budget, as we created it before, were assumptions on that 15% local share versus 20% local share for the projects that they're, I don't know whether, I have to look back, whether the particular ones on the list for 2012 and 13, which are most immediate, are ones that we see the 20 versus the 15% local share yet. That would be Seneca Road and Waterberg Road, bridges, and some of these others. But should we be, given all of that, should we be, you know, building in just a little more of a margin here? You know, the assumption that we're going to be able to stick to the $4.93 million in bonding in 2012 for some of these new projects, rather than needing to step up, that we could step it down, or that we don't have to step up yet to the 5.85 projected for 2013 and the 5.88 for 2014. Should we be reconsidering whether to ask you to build in a little more of a margin there?
I don't think so, Carol. And again, we have to acknowledge that these are all estimates. And the budget is never going to be scientifically perfect. It's always going to be our best estimate of what the costs are going to be. And all we can use when we create this budget is the best and most recent information we have available to us. And that's what we've done on these highway projects. And could it change? It could change. And as you consider authorizing these projects, you'll be able to see what the even more current estimate of cost shares might be. But for the purpose of this budget, again, I think we have to rely on the best and most recent information that we have, which came from the Highway Division mid to late summer as we were preparing this budget. I don't have any better assumptions than what we have right now, so I would suggest that we stick with what we have and just be honest with ourselves to understand this is a planning document. Try to be as accurate as possible, but it may turn out to be a bit different than what we've estimated. Again, late summer of this year.
If I believe we should be building in a little more of a margin, I don't know that it necessarily has to be here. There are sort of three places that I could see doing that. One would be here. One would be in the highway budget itself. And then the third might be just in keeping that cash balance that we talked about, that expanded budget. And of those three places, if I want to consider pushing my colleagues one more time to keep a little bit of a more of a cushion, which of those three places or other would you?
Well, it's your call. I mean, what you do. Again, I'm not advocating that you put cushion in. I think this is okay the way it is. If you were to put a buffer in the budget, you might put it in a contingency account you can draw on later. But again, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that would be the best place for me.
Another way to look at it is this is what we can afford, and if projects come in higher or the reimbursement is less, we do less. So. Leslie?
This will be quick. Joe, is the $250,000 in this capital debt for courthouse relocation or renovation this and next door? Thanks.
Okay. Are we all set then? All right. So the end of your report, Joe?
It is. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to go through the two other staff reports and the consent agenda before we break, and then move things around so that Ed can go home. So if we take PDEC, the land policy, and then go to the budget, and then the minutes policy, and then go back to other things in the appropriate order. Okay. As I said, the first thing is the next two reports and the consent, and then we'll take a break. So I'm just saying, after the break, I want to move things around a little bit. Okay, so Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
No report.
David, Finance Director.
I put in your basket the sales tax report for third quarter, and it shows, well, it's interesting because in third quarter, we just closed out, it was the highest amount of sales tax ever recorded in history of the county. Over $8 million came in from sales tax. First time we've gone over $8 million mark. And it kind of put us back on budget. The quarter was about 5.75% over last year. Year-to-date, we're 3.2%, which is right on budget. The interesting thing about it, though, was that we benefited from some adjustments. And the swing in the adjustments in this third quarter accounted for half of the growth in the quarter. We had a $750,000 increase in the quarter gross, but we had $370,000 swing from these adjustments, because last year at this time there was a minus $120,000 adjustment, and this year minus $240,000 adjustment. This year we had a positive $120,000. So if we factored out those adjustments, the quarter wouldn't have been 5%, but we're still 3% above budget. And now another little sales tax issue I thought was kind of comical and pathetic at the same time, considering you'll understand why it's pathetic. I report the budget about, I was in this having a dialogue with my cell phone carrier, because on my bill they broke out the sales tax. It said Ithaca City and Tompkins County. Now, I don't live in Ithaca City, so I question the carrier why I was being reported as being in the city. And they said, well, that's what the data says. I said, no, it can't be. You know, the city limit line is right beyond my house, and I know where I live. And so I went to the source, and I just dumbfounded to find out that when you type in location, my address, it says Ithaca City. Then type in the next neighbor from me, Ithaca City. I got to go to the 1100 block of Trumansburg Road before it becomes officially the town of Ithaca. So all these times, my large purchases, you know, the city's getting a slice of that.
Thank you, David. Jim?
So what kind of back city taxes do you
owe? That's what I want to know.
So we're having some taxation and finance, and we're having a dialogue about correcting their file. I think it's because, like I say, my property, on the sidewalk ends at my house, property lines, and across the street and beyond me are the city. So, but it's certainly disappointing.
They made a mistake with the wrong person's bill. All right. Any other questions for David? All right. Thank you. Any resolutions to be withdrawn from or added to the agenda? All right. Let's go to the consent agenda. If there's anything to be pulled, let me know. Resolution A, return school taxes.
We don't want to give it back.
Resolution B, return village taxes. Resolution C, adoption of apportionment of taxes for 2011. And Resolution D, appointment of election commissioner for 2012-2013. Resolution E, budget adjustment elections. Motion on the agenda, moved by Kathy, seconded by Frank. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, let's take a 5-minute break. We will come back at 7:30. Thank you.